There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday Eve, Little Friday edition of the show. Phone number and the text line, they're the same. I made it easy. 343-0106. 343-0106. And put that, if you don't already have it, put it in your contacts because it might not be this show, but, you know, with doing live shows 7 days a week, 56 hours a week of live local programming coming from our opulent studios here at Airport and 65, you may want to chime in. It could be on Prep Sports Report on Saturday morning or the Outdoor Show or maybe Bill Finch on Sunday or one of our shows in the evenings. Make sure you keep that number handy. And if you have the app, which you need to, it's free. It's pretty cool. Just look for FM Talk 106.5 on the App Store or on Google Play. If you have the app, you can use that to leave us a talkback message as well. Before I get to my guest this hour, I do want to address one thing. I don't know why I do this, but I still do. So from the end of last hour, Michael had texted in when I was talking to April Marie. He said, so basically the Sullivan plan, if y'all didn't hear earlier, April Marie was just talking about some election finance things, and I threw some of my theories. I call these, six-pack theories and things that get discussed over time about how to solve that problem. A good bit of it is in jest, obviously. But Michael says, so basically the Sullivan plan is indentured servitude with a caste system. I thought you claimed to be a libertarian. So, Michael, so sometimes there's fanciful satire on this show for thought starters and discussion. So yes, I have a strong libertarian lean. I don't care anybody's card, but that is a lean I have. But yeah, the idea would be, if you didn't catch it, the way we figure out how we get people elected to positions that don't already have hooks in them from somebody else or owe somebody something is I have this black van, with his full of Secret Service folks. There's a group that's decided who the best person, the wisest patriotic American is for whatever position. That decision's made. Black van pulls up, and they have the choice of going and taking that position for our republic or serving that period of time in jail. And if they take the position, their business is kept up and all those things. They don't have any financial harm at the end of it. They serve their, say, president. They serve their 4 years. And then they go right back to being butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers. So, yeah, there you go. All right, I hate to have to throw this guy into the mix. It's my buddy William Strickland, executive director of Mobile Baykeeper, but he's used to my insanity, so.
Yeah, hard to follow that one, but happy to be here as always.
I mean, just think about this. So, you worried about who has gotten to elected official before they get elected. Well, like Sally, who I talked about last hour, she's in her front yard putting pine straw out. Church. Van pulls up. Here comes Secret Service. Hey, you have been decided to be the next president of the United States. Your term starts next Monday. You can go with us, or you can go to like a federal nice prison and play volleyball for 4 years.
Hate to point out the obvious flaw, but who's gotten to the people in the van are making the decision to grab Sally?
Yes, okay. You've ruined it all for me. It's okay. Yep. It's okay. See, that's why it's just flights of fancy. But let's talk about what's real and going on. First of all, an update here. Now, discussions continuing, but give us the update on where we are on the dredge spoil and that thin layer deposit plan for Mobile Bay.
Yeah, so I'll start from the beginning here. Those who haven't heard before, what we are asking the Army Corps of Engineers to do is to stop dumping mud in Mobile Bay. We have a ship channel here in Mobile Bay that is very important to our economy and our port. They have deepened and widened it. It is virtually finished, that project. But there's continued maintenance that needs to happen. That's been going on for forever, and theoretically will go on forever until we decide we don't want to live here on the Gulf Coast any longer. And that's nowhere in the near future. So we have this ship channel to deal with. We have to keep open. So there's a lot of dredged material that's very muddy that we have to do something with. The current plan, and what's been going on for a little bit of time, is that we are going to dump all of that mud into Mobile Bay. It's something that's not done anywhere else in the country. It's something that our commercial fishermen, our charter captains, our recreational fishermen are seeing. It's harming our ecosystem. It's clouding the waters. It's killing the seagrass, which is habitat for the fishery. It's silting in our oysters when they're dying in mass, and we have lost nearly 90% of our oysters here in Mobile Bay. And so we've been asking the Corps to do something different. This campaign's been going on about a year. There's been over 23,000 letters written by you, the people of coastal Alabama, commercial
that's crazy,
fishermen, landowners.
Because that doesn't, I mean, that just doesn't happen.
Oh,
that's
agree.
A rare, rare thing.
Yeah, that's why I throw the number out, but thanks for giving it context. It is shocking, the bipartisan support. It doesn't matter who you are. If you learn enough about the issue, you're saying, hey, this has to stop. And so here this summer, our federal elected officials would get the opportunity to legislate to say, hey, here's some more money to dispose of this dredge properly. And by the way, you can't use any of the federal money to dump it into Mobile Bay. So you're going to have to do what everybody else does in the country, which is figure out a good way to use it for restoration. And then what you can't use that way, you're going to have to take it offshore, put it on land, but you can't dump it in the bay.
Yeah, you give them the budget because, I mean, we've talked about certain, and I want to go back in history too with you a little bit, but firstly, so the Corps of Engineers, they do have their hands tied by what law says. And I know in discussions I've had a decade ago or more, we were talking at that point about sand on Dolphin Island,
right?
And about the dredging and taking the sand offshore, and then here would come a storm and FEMA would have to pay money to put sand back on the beach when it should have been there anyway. And I remember talking to Mayor Collier about this over the years, and he said, John, the Corps has to do what the lowest cost option is until they're told otherwise. And so that's right. That's what we're dealing with. The Corps is like, we can only do this unless somebody tells us to do it another way.
That's right. It has to be environmentally acceptable. Right.
Right. So yeah, true.
And that's where something that we'll talk about is, as you're learning about this issue, we invite you to go to SaveMobileBay.com, where you can learn all about it. You can look, if you're a technical person, look at our paper that we've published that shows the flaws with their environmental studies on the issue. But the Corps is claiming that it is environmentally acceptable, and I want to be clear about that. They are not saying that it's good for Mobile Bay. They're not saying that it's beneficial. And I want you – that's something, if you're paying attention, that you need to know. You won't see the Corps of Engineers saying that this is a good thing. They'll say that it's an acceptable thing.
And it's like somebody being found not guilty versus innocent.
I think it is. Now, I, of course, think – it should not be acceptable, and that's why we're asking for legislation that will change that and for them to consider more information that will prove that this is very much harming. And of course, just got to believe your eyes. If you haven't seen the video, maybe you'll put it on.
Yeah, let's put it back up on our Facebook page, Leanna.
But beyond just seeing as it's sprayed out, there's another photo of an oyster going around online that's completely silted in. If you want to hear from people that spend their time, make their living on the water, they're telling you the real life impact. In fact, just today, just this morning, we were out on a dock talking about something. A guy came by, fisherman and kayak fisherman, you know, hey, you catch anything? Now I can't see anything. It's because all this mud. And he pointed over to that. We weren't far from the dredger. And he's pointed over and he says, because these guys keep dumping mud in the bay. It was picture perfect because that's what we were talking about. And so, you know, you don't have to take my word for it. Believe your eyes. Go talk to other folks that spend their time on the water, and they're going to tell you what's going on.
Yeah, we can look at a pun intended, surface level, but we can go deeper. Surface level is guys fishing. This is where the river's coming back down. And you should have better clarity, yep, so the fish could see it. But the key to this whole thing for me, and as a guy that fishes, I get that part, but is this system. And it's you and I've talked about this. It's probably nerdier than any other conversation you'll have, yep, when you come on this show. But it's like being on a diet, because humans need to eat food. You don't need to eat too much, because I will argue that the delta and all that's here because of siltation.
Yep.
Right? That comes down the river systems. But we realized it was too much Back in the day, y'all remember things like you just fly over where there's a clear cut. You'll see the fingers left around the drainages. Those are called streamside management zones to keep the silt from going there. Silt fences being required on to keep the silt out there because we're putting too much in it. Now, on top of that, then we're going to, it's not even coming from somewhere upriver. We're right there putting it in, and it's too much. It's not the healthy amount of silt for our system.
Yeah, it's just too much. So we do have a muddier system than many systems, right? So,
and it's part of the, there's a natural cycle to it.
Absolutely. And so, but the latest studies show that even though all that extra sediment's coming down river, they estimate that that's about 2.8 million cubic yards per year that come down the river.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're putting about 4.5 million cubic yards per year out of the channel and putting it directly into the bay. And
so y'all think about that. Every high river, when, you know, the Mobile looks like a coffee with cream, you know, the Tensaw, the Appalachie, the Blakely, that's only accounting for, that's 2.8.
2.8 million cubic yards annually.
And this would be an additional
4.5 million cubic yards annually.
I'm no math magician, but that sounds like more than twice.
Well, yeah. what's more, and rightfully so, we don't like all the construction runoff and development that caused in-stream erosion, but it's that's estimated 1/100th of the total 4.5 million cubic yards that you're seeing that coming from the ship channel. With this mud dumping from the core.
Coming right back, William Strickland with Mobile Baykeeper.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
At 1220 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Thursday. 343-0106 for the text line and the phone line. And we'll get to some of those texts in a second. Continue our conversation with William Strickland from Mobile Baykeeper and talking about thin layer displacement. That's the term, right?
Is that the, I believe they call it thin layer placement.
Placement. Okay, placement.
Although everybody I know calls it mud dumping.
Yeah, well, there's that. We'll put it in terms. I put it in Sullivanese. Mm-hmm. I like that. And this is something you and I had talked about before. I don't know if on air, but you talked to Jeff Poore earlier this week, and you mentioned it, and you talked about Mobile County Wildlife Association, which I did stuff with in the day. But back in the 80s, so people, because I think it's worth talking about precedents set. Because people say, well, this has been allowed.
Right.
But it was only on an emergency order. So can you take us back to what this process was? What happened in the 80s with this?
Yeah, if you don't, I'll tell you how I got there first. So I moved here just under 4 years ago, and I'm a hunter and angler, and so I got to know those guys. And so a charter captain that I'd gotten to know called me and said, you know, you say you're one of us.
Mm-hmm.
They're dumping mud in the bay right here in where I catch speckled trout in this hole. Yep. What are you going to do about it? So I started tracking down, hey, what's going on here? And it turned out Baykeeper had submitted comments in 2018 and been involved since that time. But I tracked down, I was actually fishing over on the Eastern Shore, and a guy named Art Dias said, mm-hmm. Oh, no, that's illegal. They can't be doing that because we got that banned in the 80s. And so what happened was, before that time, they were taking most of it offshore. So mm-hmm. This is not historic precedent that we dispose of our dredge inshore. And then there
it was quite the opposite.
It was. Yeah. And then in the 80s, they pitched this idea and got a permit to dump mud in the bay. And Art and whoever congressperson was at that time, so Mobile County Wildlife and Conservation Association was the group. And the commander of the Corps, they went out on a boat and showed them, hey, this is harmful. And they passed the Water Resource Development Act, which is every 2 years, and they banned this practice in 1986. So it lasted 1 year there in the 80s. And it was banned from 86. And actually, a note that I didn't mention with Jeff is that the ban was actually lifted, I believe, in 96.
The emergency order, right?
Well, no, 96 was when they changed it because they wanted to be able to do restoration. So the way it was written, it said, hey, you can't put dredge spool inland or in the estuary, and they said, no, we want to be able to do restoration, so they changed that wording. And I've heard another story from at the time he was a vice president of conservation for the Mobile Area Chamber of Commerce. And he told me, yeah, they came to us in 97, 98 that we're going to do this. And so I went down to the C-Lab and got with George Crozier, and we rode over to Vicksburg. And they said, they're going to do what? And so nobody knew about it because they handled that before anybody really heard about it. And then 2012 comes. We had a lot of storms and a lot of dredge into the ship channel, and so it would difficult to keep it cleared and stay under budget. So they got emergency permission to go back doing this practice again. And 2014 is when they got their permit to continue to do more. And that volume has only increased. Of course, now with the deepening and widening, it's going to increase even more. And I want to be clear, this is not about this project. It's about what's going to happen over the next 20 years.
Right. So we have a deepened and widened ship channel. So therefore, you have to maintain them just like we maintained the ship channel before. Absolutely. But now it's just more volume to maintain the width and the depth.
Correct.
And it's like you've talked to me about, you opened my eyes months ago, talking about this. This is being done in other ports.
Oh, yeah.
It is like, not like we're doing it. It is being done where they're not doing thin layer placement.
Yeah, so they're using Mobile Bay as the first place to do this, and they're actually pitching, and when I can show you the slideshow, they're pitching other core districts that, hey, look, I don't remember the exact wording, but something like, we've won the hearts and minds of the people in Mobile, and we're doing it here, and everybody can start doing this now. I don't think anybody else will allow it to happen there, right. but yeah, this is the first place where they're doing this. And obviously, it's much cheaper, and logistics are much easier. You run a pipe instead of having a hopper dredge, and you don't have to worry about restoration projects, in particular smaller ones, right? So you can do big ones, but not smaller ones on the cheap. And so, yeah, obviously, and we don't want to be wasteful, it is cheaper to do it this way. But I will say, about 35%, according to the Corps data, estimated of the dredge material ends back up in the ship channel.
Mm-hmm.
And so they dredge it again, which comes out to about $11 million a year of material that they've just redredged. They toss it up in the air, and it lands back in the ship channel.
So that should almost be, and I know it can't be consistent year to year, different weather patterns, but it seems like that should be taken from, if they say, okay, well, here's the new amount to do beneficial use upland or offshore disposal. That $11 million should be subtracted, or some level of it should be subtracted from that other number, right? Because you're not going to have, at least you're not fighting that silt getting back in the channel.
That's right. So, I mean, it is, as we budget, what additional costs are going to have to be. And it's an estimated $9 to $25 million. And that includes that $11 million that we won't redredge. And so that's a wide range, but it's very difficult to get those hard numbers from the Corps. Although I hope that our senators are able to get those numbers out of our own federal government, so they're able to appropriate the amount of money they need to do this. And on that note, I think it's worth mentioning, I mentioned it earlier this week, we've recently found that there's this trust fund that Senator Shelby set up, and we're very grateful for Senator Shelby's leadership and wisdom in this. It's called the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund, and last year it operated with a $1.4 billion surplus. So this is the fund that's specifically set up to handle maintenance of ship channels, had a surplus of $1.4 billion.
Nationally or?
Nationally. Okay. Nationally. So not here in Mobile Bay.
Okay.
But this
I was about
is
to say, holy cow.
So nationally, they have this surplus. And, of course, the Trump administration and DOGE is coming in and saying, where's their government waste? And so this is one of the areas where they've said, hey, you're going to have to spend this money or it's going to go away. And so we're going, well, it was
a fraction.
We get an
idea.
And it's about 2% of that surplus that will be needed to dispose of this dredge properly.
2%.
2% is all we need.
The money is there. It's already been appropriated.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So,
and let me just say, appropriated, this is where we need a lawyer in the room. The money is there is my response. I don't know if it's been appropriated or restricted.
I think earmarked might be the better. It's earmarked for doing things on...
Yeah, Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund. You can check it out.
So by the definition, and that's linked up. Can I get that at the...
Yeah, it's on our... I think we just posted about it on social media, but it should be on our website as well.
So, because the money concern that came out, and I want to come back to the environmental part that I think is, to me, the most important, but the money concern is a big one too. It was said that there's not the money, you know, from the federal side. Okay, well, we've solved that. Well, then the state would have a match.
The state has no match on chip channels that are deeper than, I think it's 40 feet, but it's 100% federal cost. So
there's not a state match. Because I was told that there was this big state match.
There is not a state match. It's 100% federal cost for maintenance of our ship channel here in Mobile Bay. Now, that just includes the channel in the bay. We are not talking about dredge material from the river throughout this. That's a whole separate pot of dredge. It gets really complicated, but
once you get past Little Sand Island, is that where, I mean, where do they say, hey, we're...
I believe it's at the tunnels, but again, okay. But the maintenance material that we're talking about, the thing that everybody's concerned about, what that video is, that is all 100% federally funded. And
well, that's interesting.
I'd like to remind everybody, that's your tax dollars. That's your money that you lent to them to give back to you.
Yeah, it's also interesting, too, and this is, I had a little piece of it when we were talking about Dolphin Island, but the kind of the way agencies are siloed in the federal government, one hand doesn't know what the other one's doing, because if you say, okay, you got to spend this 2% to be able to maintain this channel, well, what does that mean for other economic inputs into our system through seafood and recreation? That's a way more money going back to the feds and taxes.
It would seem that we'd get money back in from the government, and then we'd get a better economy for our seafood and fishing industry.
All right, coming right back. More with William Strickland right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
12:35, FM Talk 106.5, and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. This segment of the show brought to you by my buddy Clint Jameson at Adventure Earth Bicycles. So this is what, if y'all are new to the discussion, I rode bicycles through my childhood, rode them in college, and then really didn't touch one, probably after age 25 or 26. Then at 50, I got back into them, and I've been into them ever since because the e-bikes are so very cool. Clint came to me and said, hey, these things are really good for hunting, slipping around in the woods. And so I got a Scout from Magnum from him, off-road e-bike. But I'll tell you what's developed there. I still use it for that, but I use it now for just riding and getting exercise. And I know I bait you with that. I hold that out. You're like, getting exercise? Hey, you'd be better off on a regular bike. Sure, but I wouldn't ride it. So with the e-bike I have, it has, like all of them, has like an eco mode where it'll kick in. If your pedaling slows down, you're in soft sand for me, or going up a hill, it'll kick in, give you a little bit of a boost. Well, it makes riding, it makes every road feel like a flat road, but you're riding all over the place, and then you're pedaling all the rest of the time. So therefore, I like riding it. I ride it more often. I ride it for more distance, and I get more exercise. And that's why the e-bike's been really good to me and expanded how much I use a bicycle versus, something that would be there to just hold clothes. This is something that I ride weekly and multi times a week. But you can use them for all kind of different things. This time of year, I thought about it. I've had people email me over the years about this, how they use their e-bike. This guy, so he lives in, he's in Western Midtown, works in downtown. And he said, man, I need to get exercise too. So what he does is he goes to work wearing his regular work clothes. He doesn't have to wear a suit, but he has to wear like button down and khakis. He goes, rides it in the electric mode the whole way to work so he doesn't get sweaty. And then when he leaves work, he's got a little duffel bag with t-shirt and shorts, and then pedals the bike back home, gets exercise, and then doesn't show up like a sweaty mess at work. It's cool. There's a lot of ways to use these bikes. Clint's got a great selection of them. The best thing to do is go tell him what you want to do with the e-bike and then take a test ride and see what we're all talking about. He's at the corner of Little Flower and Airport in Midtown, kind of catty cornered across from Bruce Chris. He's online at adventure-earth.com. Adventure Earth Bicycles, everything inside to get y'all and me outside. All right, continue our conversation with William Strickland from Mobile Baykeeper. You know, you talk about the history was that there was a time when even back in the 80s, people said, this is not cool.
Correct.
I don't know if that's a technical term, but this is not cool. So, and then this emergency order happened these decades later. Then they went to this. Maybe all you're asking for is just go back the way it was before.
Well, I will say, as I mentioned before, going back is not necessarily the best solution, as we do know that our shorelines are eroding. We know that our marshes are drowning. You know, there are plenty of good uses for it, which is what was missing.
What was that, 96 or whatever, when you said they amended it and said...
Correct. They said we can now use it for restoration.
Which I'm all on board.
And I think everybody is. So we want to keep as much of it in the system as we can to do good restoration projects.
Just not in the water.
Correct. And what can't be used for restoration and in good ways we need to dispose of properly, which means offshore, on land. And of course, if there's other creative solutions, everybody's open to that. But this has to end, and it has to end quickly. And luckily, we're coming up on a time where the people that we've put in office to represent us get an opportunity to do that here this summer.
Yeah, because what we're, I think, losing in doing this, like we started at the beginning, I talk about this is like food and diets, and you know, there's a healthy amount of eating and, yeah, and there's too much. That our system would have times of year, you know, late winter, spring, that you get turbid water, and the silt comes down and builds up. But then we're not getting we're not getting that green water in the bay for the number of months that we should.
That's right. And we know this is not the only issue affecting sediment, right? We've talked about development. We've talked about the way that but all those things are improving as well. The way that we handle our forests, hopefully we can start improving the way that we build some of these neighborhoods and other commercial developments. But
you said those are small compared to the volume. Yeah,
this is orders of magnitude greater than what we see from those sort of disturbances on both the eastern and western shores combined.
All right, William, I'm going to go to the text line. Questions in for you. First up, Butterknife on the text line said, when Baykeeper brought their suit, Jeff Poore said he is more than likely not to side with Baykeeper because there's an environmental group, and any environmental group is automatically liberal and woke. We see that same stupid viewpoint in Alabama politics. Well, I know, listen, I know him. I mean, he's told you, but I know him personally. I know this man sitting in here with me. He likes outdoor stuff the same way I do. And
yeah, like, yeah, you can catch me in the woods with a blaze orange Baykeeper hat on if you're interested.
Billy D says, let the first sturgeon get sucked up and spit out, and everything will get shut down immediately.
You know, I wish that were accurate. Now, I don't think anybody's witnessed a spitting out, but we have seen, of course, people reporting to us, 4 sturgeon that have been dead in the water here just in the last 365 days. Only one got a necropsy, and that one was caused by trauma. Of course, what the trauma was, we don't know, but there are sturgeon that people have witnessed.
Okay, T-Mac says, the Corps is great about telling private property owners what they can and can't do on their own property for environmental reasons, but can't follow their own rules when they want to do something. So that's been a big story here the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I'm grateful that some of these contractors have come out and said that. And, of course, I'm not one to say, hey, let's take it easy on these guys, because I think it's important that they do things the right way as well. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, dredging out a boat slip is going to have a lot more impact than 4.5 million cubic yards.
Less. It's going to have less.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A lot less. Excuse me. Thank you.
You know, and also, we are a rule of law. I am a rule of law kind of person. So if the rule is for the person doing it on their own, then the agency that tells them should be beyond reproach in that as well.
Well, I certainly think so. And one of the difficult things with all this, especially when you deal with federal agencies, is these laws are complicated. And so what I do is I talk to folks like you. I go out down to Bayou La Batre and drink a cup of coffee with guys, figure out what they think the issues are, what's actually impacting their lives, go witness with my own eyes, trust the scientists that I work with. And then I say, hey, guys, this is a problem. Can y'all help me figure out how it's illegal or what we can do about it? And so in this case, it is a complex one, and it does look to get the best solution. What we're going to need to do is get our federal elected officials to act.
You know, and talk about that federal level, and I just mentioned it at the beginning with the Dolphin Island thing, but this is emblematic. Federal agencies get in a silo, and they do what they do, but they don't look elsewhere. Right? Go back to the example of those days, you know, we had so many hurricanes, and at that point, the Corps was taking the sand in the lower end of the bay and that dredging, taking it offshore to beneficial use and not putting it on Dolphin Island. Here comes a storm. FEMA has to apply money to put sand back on Dolphin Island that they had taken offshore. So yes, that was the cheapest option at that point, but then the next year they're spending the money on the sand. Same thing here.
Yes.
They may say it's cheaper to do this thin layer placement. Well, but then what reduction in revenue do you get from the seafood industry, recreational boat sales, recreational fishing? I mean, I know this is like a term that gets holistically, look at the whole dang thing.
I can assure you that the economic analysis was lacking when they did this. If you're looking at it holistically, obviously it's a big economic impact to have a deeper, wider channel to get bigger ships. If we're able to do that, then that's going to be great for our state. And no one is trying to stop that. In fact, I think what I hope everybody's hearing is this is a win-win solution.
Yeah, I hadn't heard anybody who's not for the deepen and widen
we get a deeper channel. We get the opportunity to grow our port. We get more of our federal tax dollars back down here. And in fact, it incentivizes more restoration projects. And I'll tell you, we've been able to now put together a list of 19 projects from groups like the Nature Conservancy, Department of Conservation, and others. And they're all being told, hey, we don't have dredge material to give you.
Do we?
And so,
are you playing matchmaker? Say, hey, would you meet Mr. Core?
We're attempting to. We are attempting to. So I'm not sure what the disconnect is there, why the on one hand, I have the Corps saying we don't have any projects. On the other hand, I have people with projects that are saying they're telling us we don't have dredge. So somebody needs to bring that together. We, of course, are attempting to, but I hope that it'll be our federal senators and representatives that get that done.
Sean on the text line says, couldn't you just pile it up somewhere and use it for fill dirt?
Yeah, I think any of those options are viable. Putting it on land, selling it to others, all things that have been done. But again, it comes down to cost, and it comes down to first, this needs to be restricted. This needs to be stopped. And once it's stopped, now we have to actually start looking at what are our other solutions.
I want to answer. So Butterknife came back and said, I'm just saying anything environmental is automatically going to be downplayed in Alabama. I think at state government level it is, but they don't, like I talk to people at a state level and a federal level, they'll say, like, basically, what is it with y'all? Yeah. And they're like, you're you know, conservative on this. I said, well, you don't take into account that this is why we're here. This is our lifestyle. It's our business, for a lot, but it's also our lifestyle. And you start messing with that, and I don't care what person who they voted for in the last election, you got people go from all sides say, yeah, we're not doing this.
Yeah, but Butterknife, first of all, you're correct. That is often the case. And Baykeeper has contributed to that issue before and may still at times. But I will tell you this, is we're not talking about just the little critters here. We're talking about the people that depend on them, those commercial fishermen who wake up and work hard every single day from long before sunrise until after sunset. We're talking about the folks that make a living taking people out fishing and those that just like to go fishing on the weekend, like me, right?
That's the biggest. I don't have the chart in front of me. It's old. Texas A&M had done a study, and I use this in discussion of federal snapper regulations, but it showed for every day that Alabama recreational fishermen went out, the additional effect to the economy, it's millions a day.
Yeah.
Snapper season was open, it was like $1.4 million a day.
I'm not surprised by that. First of all, I know how expensive it is to go to snapper fishing, but you got to get your cooler and you got to eat
ice boat,
before,
gas,
after,
yes,
et cetera. But, our tourism industry suffers when our water quality suffers. So it is an economic argument. And I'll also say you can do something about it. You can go to SaveMobileBay.com, and it's customizable. We give you the address, everything. If you want to say, hey, I'm a conservative, and I'm concerned about this issue because what it does to our way of life, our culture. Because if all this goes away, those guys, I'll tell you, those oystermen, they'll tell you themselves, they're the last of a dying breed. And, of course, my goal is to make that not be the case. I want their kids and grandkids to be able to go out there and catch oysters and make a living doing it. I want our oyster businesses to thrive. And right now, I mean, literally, they're looking at a few years left if things keep going the way they're going.
Yeah, it hit me and others like me during the oil spill, pictured what our life would be here without the things we go do. And this is from the recreational side.
Yeah.
It's a heavy weight. Oh. I mean, I thought about it back then. I said, what if I can't go fishing? What if I can't go, go anchor up and hang out at Sand Island? What if I don't know. Yeah, and I don't know if I would still have such a tether to where I'm from,
No doubt. It's an identity issue. And so that's why we need to act. And I'll make that finer point. I keep making it. The time is now. So they are considering this right now at the federal level. They're about to go in and finalize some of these budgets and appropriate money. And so the time now is for you to act. SaveMobileBay.com is a way that you can do that. But you should also now, because now is the time to act. Those that don't agree, first of all, I really genuinely want to know why.
Mm-hmm.
When folks say, well, we can't keep the channel open, I need more than that, because I'm given what I think and what experts have told me is an option to keep the channel open and really be a win-win for everybody. And as you know, Sean, whenever you're in something contentious like this, this is where the disinformation starts. So it says something to be on the lookout. That's why I mentioned earlier, I don't think you'll see the Corps saying anything but it's environmentally acceptable. And so we ask that you trust your eyes. And if you hear other things, like, we are open to new information that we don't have at Baykeeper. And I know those commercial fishermen and charter captains are as well. But if you have learned enough about this issue where you feel comfortable taking action, you're joining 23,000 letters being written already.
I mean, that says something.
There's plenty of cover for you if you're concerned about somebody finding out.
We'll give you that web address when we come back again so you can, if you're motivated, write that letter. All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
1250 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. So my buddy Trey, you know, I celebrated this year FM Talk 106.5, 16 years old. So the radio station could drive now, but heck, 1-800-GOT-JUNK here can vote. 18 years plus getting junk gone from homes, businesses, storage units in Mobile and Baldwin counties. And what I love about it, too, is they actually understand that you have a life and family and work and all these things. So the you have some places will say, well, we'll be there sometime between 8 a.m. and 9 p.m. You know, like you're going to take all day off and sit and wait. Doesn't work that way with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. When you call, the name is the number, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or go to the website, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. They'll find the day that works for you, the time that works for you. And y'all, they set an appointment. And then they're there, you're there, and all you do is point the junk you want gone, and they'll quote you a price right there on the spot. You say, yep, well, they get to work right then and get it gone. So 18 years plus of doing great work, my friend Trey and 1-800-GOT-JUNK. So make that appointment today to get that junk out of your life. 1-800-GOT-JUNK and 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Continue for a few more minutes here. William Strickland from Mobile Baykeeper. I want to run through a couple of these, but one more time, the website, if people want to go.
It's simple, savemobilebay.com.
Okay. Jerry in Fort Morgan said, we need to stop acting like this hasn't been a problem in the Bay for years. Alabama's allowed the Bay to be raped in the past by removing the clamshell bottom, and no one was able to stop them. We need to stop worrying about the Chamber of Commerce and look at saving our Bay. So there's a...
I agree we need to save our Bay, and I know that there are people at the Chamber that agree with you, Jerry.
By the way, somebody, that was a joke the other day. I did say, because I start trouble, I said, because the Langan Park dredging started today. Yeah, I said, my friend Ben had texted me something about it. I said, is it true that they're taking that dredge and thin layer placing it as well in the bay? That's not true. But
no, that's a great project, and I'm really glad to see that move forward. And this morning was a great celebration of that.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay, Billy in Fowl River said, why don't they build an island like they did out of the industrial canal and pump all the dredge in there? So he's talking about Gilliard.
Yeah, Billy, that's a good question. I get it a lot, and I reference what I said before, where the good news is we don't have to come up with projects like that right now. Well, there's 19 sitting there on the shelf, people that have said, hey, we're ready to roll. We need dredge material to do that. So none of them are an island like you're talking about, but there are lots of different options to do good restoration work. And the need is there definitely to use this stuff in a way that will be helpful to our ecosystem.
Yeah, you look at an example of it. I mean, you go no further than the Cedar Point project, right?
Yeah. Cedar Point has used dredge material. I know there's lots of living shorelines that are sitting there waiting. And you know, one thing about the marsh is people, you know, as we've channelized our rivers, like you talked about, you know, we don't get that flooding and drying on our marshes as well. And so our marshes are drowning.
What does that mean? Because you said the marsh is drowning. How does it drown?
Yeah, so often, you know, marsh is created when sediment comes in through hydrologic flows, whether it be river, currents, things like that. And then there's times where there's lots of water, and so it floods. And then there's times where there's little water, and it dries. When it dries, that sediment settles out. That marsh grass takes hold there, and it keeps that sediment in place. Well, as we've changed the way things flows through different causeways, channelizing rivers, or even channelizing so we can get across a bay or the sound or something like that, we don't see those same flows. So we have a lot of marshes that are just drowning. They're not getting that settlement of sediment there. And so, therefore, the marsh grass is underwater more often than it wants to be. Marsh grass doesn't like to live underwater all the time, right? And so we need to build up those marshes. And the Nature Conservancy is doing great work on that. And of course, they want to do a lot more.
I mean, it is, you know, and I'm trying to be Pollyanna, but there's a win-win here because you take, okay, we want this widened, deepened ship channel. They got the silt. Okay. They got to get it out of there. You can do something with it and then just create a better place to live. Like, it could almost be, I would market it as like, we're dredging the ship channel to help the whole environment around here. I mean, that stuff is gold that they're taking out of there.
And we absolutely, but we do have to be careful about that. Oftentimes these beneficial use projects get put in under the guise of doing good, but sometimes they're just the cheaper option as well. So we do have to be careful when we don't want to write a blank check. And also we have to know that we're dealing with volumes that it's unrealistic to think we're going to be able to do restoration projects with 4.5 million cubic yards every year. So we're going to need a safe disposal option that we cannot use if we can't use all of it beneficially.
Okay, let's see if I get all these answered. Oh, yeah, I didn't. This one came in earlier. This is from Chris in Orange Beach, said, ask William about the coal ash. That's the real ticking time bomb.
Yeah, Chris, we've been fighting the coal ash fight for a long time. It's related but not to what we're talking about here. For those of you that don't know, there's about 22 million tons of coal ash sitting alongside the Mobile River. We know that it's actively leaching into the groundwater and getting into the river, high levels of arsenic in particular, but all those heavy metals. And then there's been three spills just in the southeast since, I believe, 2008 here. And those spills are catastrophic. And so if you want to see a harmed ecosystem, go to Kingston, Tennessee, mm-hmm. and look at what's happened with that coal ash spill. And so that's what we're trying to avoid. And same issue we're having there where they're not willing to move it. But I will say this, on a positive note, the power company did announce that they're planning to recycle as much of it as possible into concrete. And, of course, we want them to put that into the permit and to say we'll recycle all of it. Let's extend that deadline mm-hmm. and say we have plans to recycle 100% of this coal ash. And it may take 20 years.
It's,
I don't know how long
it'll
take.
Kind of it's not an environmental, but it's a beneficial use to the byproduct.
Yeah, and we've got a lot of construction here coming up as well.
Let's see, yeah. Might be a big bridge.
Bridges and other things that we need concrete for. So I think that's another win-win solution. But the key, again, is let's protect people and protect our fishery and protect those that like to hunt up in that area and say, let's put it into a permit where we know what's going to happen and not leave it up to whoever decides to wake up and decide to do something different.
Yeah, I mean, we can run out of time, but I've had this discussion before. You can, even if you're looking at it straight from a fiscal level, you look what happened at Kingston and look at what the remediation has cost them up there to deal with it, let alone the environmental yes. disaster, but to try to restore it, it's you know, the pound of cure, pinch of whatever it is. I forget that, you know.
They've spent well over $1 billion cleaning up and then paying people that have gotten sick from that cleanup. And so, yeah, it's definitely a concern. And Chris, I appreciate the breath of fresh air. I'm hoping that this fall, Sean and I can come on here. And there's lots of issues to talk about, and I want to talk about those. Hopefully I'll be fishing for redfish or preparing for the duck season, and we'll get this mud dumping behind us. But you guys can help if you go to SaveMobileBay.com and write your elected officials.
All right, y'all do it. William, good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too.
All right, coming back, hour number two of Midday Mobile.